From WJCT Studios in Jacksonville, Florida, I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Brock.
And I'm Aaron Edelson.
And this is Deemable Tech, the show that brings you the latest news in tech, computers, gadgets, the internet, and social networking, and then we answer your tech questions. If you have any questions about your desktop, laptop, tablet, or mobile phone, we're here to help. If you have a question that you want to ask Deemable Tech, give us a call at 904-372-DEEM. That's 904-372-3336. Or you can send us an email at questions@deemable.com, post a message on our Facebook wall at facebook.com/deemable, or send us a tweet at deemable. Well, this week we got a whole bunch of questions via email. We didn't get any voicemails this week, but we did get a bunch of emails, so that is all we're going to do today is answer emails.
Excellent.
So, Tom, we got one. What's that one about?
Yeah, Eric J. writes in, I go to websites, and okay. I see an orange icon with a dot and two curved lines on it. I think he's talking about, sort of looks like a little broadcast icon.
Oh, okay.
And sometimes it says RSS next to it. What is RSS, and why should I care?
You know, when you first said that, I was like, he goes to websites. Okay, well, yeah, I go to websites, too. That's good. A lot of people go to websites.
Do you do websites?
I do websites. When I'm downloading the internets. No, well, RSS, not to pick on you, Eric, RSS stands for Really Simple Syndication. And I actually had to look that up because I couldn't remember what it stood for. The easiest way to describe RSS is to say that RSS is a news feed that a lot of websites use. They generate so that you can read their news or whatever other content they create the way that you want to read it.
Right.
So an RSS reader is a program that basically lets you build your own newspaper with your favorite websites. So if you wanted to read all the articles from, let's say, Mashable, Engadget, the Florida Times Union, and say maybe the Huffington Post, you could read all of them on one web page or one app without having to go to each individual website every day.
Right. I do that personally. Like I'm maybe a little bored at work sometimes. So I have, you know, like about 100 websites that I'm interested in instead of like going to each one.
Right.
You know, I've just got their feeds all in my feed reader and I can just browse through all the updates instantly.
Yeah, I think I have roughly 300 in my feed reader. So every week I get about 3,000 to 4,000 articles.
Yeah.
And I don't read all of them because that would be insane, but yeah. I do skim through and, you know, read the ones that are most interesting to
me.
But
it's a great tool. It's really, it's a really powerful,
Yeah, there's no way that I could go through 300 different websites, individually click on each link and go back and forth to all of them. So it does help.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a few websites, Eric, that you would enjoy reading, you could get a feed reader and subscribe to those websites. And then whenever you want to read what they've written, all you have to do is open your feed reader and you have everything that they've written since the last time that you went to their site.
Absolutely.
There's one that I use that's really awesome, which is Google Reader.
That's what I use as well.
You just sign in with your Google account and you subscribe to the sites that you want to have. And of course, it's hooked up with the Google search engine, so you can find the site you're looking for.
That's what I would give a plug to it. It's really smart, like as far as you just put in, you know, the website you're interested in, and it will track down the correct feed URL, the web address for the feed 99% of the time.
Yeah, it gets a little tricky because you have, for some feed readers, you have to know what the URL of the feed is.
That's right.
Which is an XML file.
Yeah, and that and when you see that icon, Eric, you know, that clicking on that generally will take you to that specific URL.
Right.
That specific address that it needs for the feed. But a good feed reader, like we said, like Google Reader, can actually usually suss that out on its own.
Yeah. There are a ton of good apps on iOS and Android, and even BlackBerry's got a few good ones. On iOS, my favorite is Reader and Feedler, actually. I kind of go back and forth between those two. What's nice about them is they work together with Google Reader.
Really?
So you just put in your Google, you sign in with your Google Reader account, and you see everything that's on your Google Reader. Okay. So it's all synchronized back and forth.
Yeah, excellent.
On the BlackBerry, BlackBerry News is a good feed reader for that. Also, Feedly, Pulse, and My Sixth Sense are pretty good ones that are both on iOS and Android.
Nice.
So they can go back and forth on those.
And of course, on Android, you have Google Reader.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of baked into it. So
yeah. Cool.
Let's see, we got another email from Shannon. Aaron, can you grab that one?
Absolutely. It says, my brother told me that he listens to podcasts like yours on his MP3 player on the way to work. I listen to your podcast on the website, so how can he listen to a podcast if he doesn't have internet access? Do I have to use iTunes to subscribe to a podcast?
Oh, well, first off, Shannon, thanks for listening to our podcast.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, you don't have to just listen to it on our website. You can download it to your MP3 player or your phone. Ironically, that's a really closely related question to our last question.
Absolutely.
Because a podcast is just a type of RSS feed. Mm-hmm. The only thing that makes it different from a regular RSS feed is that it's got an audio file or a video file in it, actually attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can subscribe to a podcast using any of the RSS readers that we were talking about.
Yep.
But they don't work the same as an app that's specifically designed to listen to podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Most apps that are designed to be used with podcasts, which are called podcatchers usually,
mm-hmm.
they allow you to download the audio or video to your phone or your computer or MP3 player so you can listen to them offline. Also, cool. You can usually set them up to where they automatically download any new episodes and they keep only the most recent episode and they delete the old episodes for you. Or they keep any episodes that you haven't listened to yet. So it makes it convenient to keep up with your favorite shows.
All right, I have a question, Ray. Maybe jives with this.
Uh-huh.
Why are we calling them podcasts?
Well, actually, the word podcast is a neologism of the word broadcast.
It's a good word.
It's a nice 50-cent word. it's a neologism of the word broadcast and pod from like the iPod.
Uh-huh.
Because originally, podcasts became popular because people were listening to shows like ours and others on their iPod,
right?
The old classic iPod that you had to synchronize mm-hmm. with your computer to get music on it. So what you would do on a classic iPod is you would use iTunes on your PC or Mac to subscribe to a podcast. And every time you synced your iPod, you'd have the latest episode.
Mm-hmm.
It would just download it, and then when you synced it up, it'd be synced up with your iPod. And that still works today. You can still do that way today. Just go to iTunes and go to the podcast.
And this podcast is on iTunes.
Yeah, you can go to iTunes, search for Deemable Tech, and we're there. It also works the same way with an iPhone or an iPod Touch. Same way, it'll just synchronize with your iTunes account. But there's a lot easier way to do it on an iPhone or an iPod Touch, and that's by downloading. Apple just released this their podcast app. It's mm-hmm. appropriately titled Podcasts.
It's brilliant,
and it's free. or you can use a third-party app like Downcast, which is my favorite.
Okay.
Podcast, the app Podcast, it's really gorgeous. Of course, you know, Apple.
That's the one with the tape deck background, right?
Yeah, it's got that tape deck background.
That was cool.
Yeah. It's nice. It is really limited, and it's a little buggy. I've had some kind of quirky time dealing with it. Quirky time dealing with it. I don't know what that sentence means, but it has a few quirks.
It's giving you issues.
Yeah. Downcast, on the other hand, is very feature filled, but it's kind of boring mm-hmm. the UI of it. But
more utilitarian.
Yeah, very utilitarian. What about Android, guys? Are there good podcast apps on Android?
Yeah, there's a couple of them out there. Of course, the official one is called Google Listen.
Yeah.
And kind of like a podcast from Apple. Some users find it a little buggy or quirky.
Yeah, okay. I chime in there. I grabbed it up when I saw it. I was like, oh, mm-hmm. Google has a podcast app, you know. And it's been a while. I don't remember my specific complaints, but it seemed really buggy to me, and I dumped it very quickly and went to a third-party app. I'm not saying it hasn't improved. Hopefully it has. And it's Google, so,
yeah.
You know, they're going to continue to develop it.
They typically do, yeah, keep it.
But you do have alternatives.
Which one are you using, Tom?
I'm using Dog Catcher. That's D-O-G-G Catcher.
D-O-double-G.
D-O-double-G. and honestly, it's not a free app. It's $4.99. But I think it's personally money well spent. It's very feature-filled, very user-friendly. It's smart about keeping, you know, you can customize it to keep a certain number of previous episodes, if you know, whether or not I've listened to it, that sort of thing. It's very intelligent about that. You can skip back and forth and stuff. So I like D-O-double-G Catcher a lot.
Of course,
You said that was $4.99?
Yeah.
That's not terrible. It's kind of pricey, though.
Yeah, so some people don't like the paid apps. So there are other free apps in addition to the Google ones, such as PodKicker Podcast Player. That's the one that I like to use.
Whose phone was going off? That's
obviously not Ray, since you're an iPhone.
It was not my phone, yeah. My phone doesn't go droid. All right. And our BlackBerry expert, Kevin, isn't here today, but we talked yesterday about the BlackBerry podcast app, which if you've got a BlackBerry Bold or Curve, Pearl, Storm, or Tor, you can use that app. Or just search the BlackBerry App World directory for third-party app.
And I would like to kind of jab in here real quick and say that for those users on maybe the Android world that aren't having good issues finding us in the search features, there is a direct URL that you can add the podcast to your podcast player.
Yeah, that's what I was about to get to. Regardless of what app you're using, once you download and install the app, there's usually a search engine involved.
Right.
So you can search for whatever podcast you're listening to, whether it's Deemable Tech or, CNET's The 404, to plug those guys because I love their podcast, or, This Week in Tech.
Mm-hmm.
Just search for it and usually you'll see their podcast in the directory. Like I said, search for Deemable Tech.
Right.
If you can't, then you'll have to manually enter the URL of the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
In our case, you can type in dmbl.co/pod. And that'll give you our podcast.
Yes.
If you type that into the URL for your podcast.
Yeah,
directory.
Like we said, you might have to manually, remember, this is an RSS feed, so you might have to manually, in your podcast app, enter the address of that RSS feed. And usually, again, you can find that address by going to the website, clicking on that little orange broadcast icon, and that'll take you to a page where you can kind of see a stream of all their content, and that's the address you want. That's the address you want to enter into your podcast app.
If you do use iTunes and you're on iPhone or iPod Touch, there's actually a link on our website that you can click on that'll take you directly to iTunes.
Oh, cool.
And I have a little Deemable plus iTunes equals heart.
And of course, just reminding the users that once you do that manual addition, that you will have that feed then in your subscriptions, and that'll start updating.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. At that point.
That being said, listeners, make sure you subscribe to our podcast. The more subscribers we have, the more we can expand what we're doing here at Deemable Tech. But we have got to take a quick break. After the break, we'll take more of your questions. This is Deemable Tech. If you have a tech question for Deemable Tech, give us a call at 904-372-DEEM. That's 904-372-3336. Or send us an email to questions@deemable.com. If you missed an episode of Deemable Tech, or you just want to hear the show again, be sure to subscribe to our podcast by searching for Deemable Tech in your favorite podcast app, like iTunes or Google Listen. If Deemable Tech isn't listed, you can type in our podcast URL, which is dmbl.co/pod. That's dmbl.co/pod. Also, be sure to follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/deemable or on Twitter at Deemable. You can also find us on Google+. Just search for Deemable Tech. Welcome back to Deemable Tech. Let's take some more of your emails. Aaron?
Yes, we have one from Odessa, and she asks us, how can I turn off my Facebook account?
Turn off? Hmm. What do you mean, just like shut your computer off?
No, I think she means to disable it. There's all kinds of reasons. Some people get burnt out.
Wait, you can leave Facebook?
Well, they don't want you to know that you can, but yes, you actually can.
Okay.
I have a little experience with this. I actually gave Facebook up for Lent. That was an experience.
Give up like chocolate or caffeine or something.
This was worse. Like the cravings did not go away for a couple weeks. I would find myself reflexively typing in the Facebook address and have to stop myself. But Odessa, if you actually want to get off Facebook, you have a couple of options. The first is to just deactivate or disable your account. So that takes it takes it offline, if you will, but it does not delete your friends list, your history, the pictures you uploaded, basically any of your information. The account's still there. It's just inactive.
So it kind of gives users a dry run if they thinking about deleting, but they don't want to re-enter all that stuff again if they don't want to delete
it. Or you want to take a break or for whatever reason, you know.
So if you disabled your account and I searched for you, would I find you?
You would not.
Oh, okay.
And I would not appear on your friends list anymore.
You would not be my friend anymore?
I would not be your friend anymore.
That's really depressing.
However, as soon as I re-enabled my account, all that stuff would come back. I would still have the same friends. I would have, you know, all the information I ever entered, whatever.
So instead of being like online death, it's just like an online coma.
Yeah. Yeah. Just taking a little nap.
Okay.
But they do also give you the nuclear option, which is total deletion. Your account would theoretically be gone forever. If you want to come back to Facebook at some point, you would be starting from scratch and have to create a brand new account. I do say theoretically because Facebook admits that some of your photos may still be bouncing around a server somewhere, but they claim that no one can access them.
Okay.
But let me walk you through how you would deactivate an deactivate, not this is not total deletion, deactivate an account from a web browser such as Internet Explorer or Firefox or whatever you're using. So log into Facebook. All right, and in the upper right-hand corner of the Facebook page, you'll see, you know, your name. Mine's Tom Bronze up there. And beside that, there's a little down arrow. And when you click that, you see a list of options, including account settings and privacy settings. So select account settings. And then on the left side of the screen, you're going to see a menu that says general, security, and that
Wait,
kind of
where's,
stuff.
Wait, where's the down? I'm actually doing this just to follow along.
It's up by your name.
Oh, so next to where it says home.
Yeah.
Okay, I see it. Okay.
Home, Ray Hollister, and then a down arrow.
All right.
All right. Then click Account Settings.
Okay.
And then on the left-hand side of the screen, you should see a menu. It says General Security. So click Security.
Okay.
And this is a real good page to look at.
I would never look under Security to shut that off.
Like I said, they don't want to make it obvious.
They don't want you to do it.
This is a really good page to look at in general, by the way, because you can set all kinds of options, like having Facebook send you a text when you log in from a new device to make sure that, you know, people aren't using your Facebook account, but we're not here to talk about that today. So down the bottom, kind of hiding out there in plain sight, are three magic little words: deactivate my account.
I'm gonna do it.
All right. It's almost as if Facebook doesn't want you to notice it, right?
Oh my goodness. Okay, go on. Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm gonna talk about this. You can go ahead and click it, by the way, users at home. This won't deactivate your account yet. You're definitely not committed. So you arrive at what I call the Facebook guilt trip page.
It is. It really is.
You're going to see pictures of several of your friends. They're usually close friends. I noticed when I was doing this, researching this morning, that the friends it was showing me were all attractive women. Your mileage may vary.
I only have one attractive woman, or actually two, including your fiance, Aaron, on my page that just popped up.
Facebook is definitely trying to, you know, tug on your emotional emotions here.
For example, Sean Birch, we'll miss you. Aaron, we'll miss you. Wow.
Yeah, and it asks if you want to send them a message, you know, a final farewell. Because obviously, you can never again contact these people
if you don't have
Facebook. Right? So be strong and remember that you can still pick up the phone and call this person anytime.
Or even meet them in person in the real world.
Yeah.
That is so funny.
And just keep moving on down the page. Facebook wants you to tell them why you're leaving, yada, yada.
You don't have to, but
you don't have to. So you can fill out whatever information you feel comfortable filling out and move on. There's also a box that says opt out of receiving emails from Facebook. It's a checkbox. I recommend checking it. Otherwise, Facebook is going to sort of haunt you from beyond the grave.
Really? Can't you come back?
Yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen.
Don't you miss us?
They're determined to keep you on. So if you're ready to take the final plunge,
it's really codependent.
Yes, it is.
I didn't realize how codependent Facebook was.
If you're ready to take the final plunge, you click that confirm button at the bottom, and you are deactivated.
Oh, I don't think I can do it.
All right. Well, okay, so let's say you did it, though. Mm-hmm. But wait, I changed my mind. How do I reactivate? It's really easy. You just log back into Facebook. That's literally the process.
That's easy enough.
Yeah. The only wrinkle to that at all is that they don't want you doing this, like, every day. So if you have to like wait 48 hours between deactivations. Like if you can't deactivate, log in, deactivate, log in, which apparently people were doing. And I could kind of see the point, because if you don't want somebody, if you want total control over your Facebook page, you know, then only have it activated when you're on, but they don't let you do that anymore.
Yeah. It's almost like signing in and out of Facebook.
Yeah.
In a real sense of the word.
Right. It was, I think someone called it like the hard sign out. That's the activation. But okay. If you are really serious about quitting Facebook, this could be for personal reasons. Sometimes, you know, you need to take a break, get all your stuff off the web.
Was getting a bunch of things that she didn't feel morally that she wanted to be exposed to, so she decided she was leaving Facebook permanently, and she did.
Okay, yeah. You can delete your account forever. This is a little more involved. You got to click that down arrow beside your name again, Ray.
Mm-hmm.
But this time you're going to click on help.
Help.
Yeah, and the help box is going to pop up.
Okay.
And then in the search for help box, type delete my account.
This reminds me of how it was at AOL when you wanted to cancel your account.
They don't want you leaving.
They don't want you to do it. Oh, okay.
All right. And at this point, Facebook, you actually have to fill out a delete request form, which I believe they process manually.
Wow.
And supposedly it takes about 2 weeks, during which I imagine you could change your mind. And I've honestly never tried the nuclear option, so I can't give you a lot more guidance from here. I've heard a rumor, though, that every time you complete this process, you can hear Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg shouting, "No!" But I can't confirm
that. Like Darth Vader, that's great.
I'm sure Facebook won't make it any easier than they have to for you, but be brave, be strong, and good luck.
All right, well, we got another Facebook question. Aaron, grab that one.
Yeah, this one's from a listener called Nelson, and he asks, I'm constantly getting notifications on my iPhone from Facebook about different Facebook apps that I've been invited to.
Oh, lucky you, Nelson.
Says, I'm really sick of them. What do I have to do to make them stop?
Make it stop!
I know, they are so irritating.
Since it's an iPhone user, let's give this one to Ray.
Yeah, Nelson, thanks for your question, because this is one of my personal pet peeves. And I hadn't taken the time to look up how to make it stop until we got your email. I get tons of notifications from my family and friends to install this app or help them out with crops in that game. I found out that you can manage notifications on your iPhone by, ironically, exiting the Facebook app and go into settings. And then scroll down to the settings app on your iPhone or your iPad. Then scroll down to Facebook. You'll see it listed under the applications. Then tap on Facebook. Then tap push notifications. Then at the bottom of that screen, you'll see application requests. It'll be a little on-off switch. Turn that little switch to off.
Mm.
And then you'll stop being annoyed by those application requests on your iPhones. So that made my life a lot easier. I don't mind getting a notification that, Tom sent me a message or that, my sister posted a picture and tagged me on it.
Right.
But I just don't, I'm tired of hearing about My Calendar and Farmville and all these, and Mob Wars and all that. I was into them for about 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was into them pretty heavy, but I got over that because I was like, this is not helping my life.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want this in my life anymore. Now, also, if you get an invitation to an app and you don't want to use that app, like you decide, I'm never going to use that, I have no interest, and you don't want to constantly be bothered by the same person sending you an invitation because you got that one friend who's really into, Farmville and they're constantly asking you to help them.
Yep.
Or you just decided, or for any app by that person, you can, on your computer, click on the icon of the world, little globe icon, and then click the small X on the notification just to the right of it. And you'll get a little alert that says, turn off notifications from blank app name. And it'll have two small buttons, turn off or keep on. And obviously you'll want to click turn off.
Yep.
And then you'll never be made guilty about not helping your friend with their crops ever again.
Yeah, they can ask, but just won't.
And let me jump in here and just say that there's a kind of a similar process on the Android devices as well for people that are using the Facebook app for Android. On that one, you just go into the Facebook app, press the menu key on your Android device, and then go to settings. And then if you scroll all the way down under notifications, you can actually turn off individual notifications for friend requests, comments, friend confirmations, photo tags, events, nearby friends, and application requests.
That's great, yeah.
So you can turn on and off the ones that you want to receive or not want to receive right there.
And that's another one of those menu items that it wasn't really easy to find. It wasn't in the Facebook app.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had to go outside of the Facebook app to find it on iPhone. Is it the same way with there or is it in the Facebook app?
This one, you open up the Facebook app.
But you gotta dig down for it.
That makes sense.
Not too far, thankfully. So,
all right, we got another email, and this is kind of changing topics, from Linda. And she asks, can a PlayStation wireless headset be used with a regular computer? My son needs a headset to use for a Spanish course that he's taking for school, and he plays Call of Duty and would like to have a headset so that he can talk to other players in the game. If he could have one headset that would work for both, that would be great. If not, is there a wired version that would work?
Okay, yeah, I had to look this up because I didn't know on this one. The Sony PlayStation Bluetooth headset, actually, it's a pretty impressive headset. It does work with Macs and PCs.
Nice.
You said a regular computer, and I don't know. I guess Linux would not be regular, and Mac and PC would be regular. So I just went off of that. Sorry, Linux fans. Well, actually, it does work with Linux, too, most builds, because they support Bluetooth. Assuming that, of course, the PC has Bluetooth. As long as it has Bluetooth, you should be fine. If not, you can pick up a Bluetooth USB dongle for around $15 to $20 online, and sometimes you'll see them in local stores for about the same price. Or if you're lucky like me and you have a friend like Kevin who just happened to have an extra one, and he let me use it. So, also, the Sony Bluetooth headset can be used with a cell phone. Nice. So if your son has a phone with Bluetooth, which includes practically all modern smartphones, iPhones, Android devices, BlackBerry, everything, he can use it with that as well. So he could be, you know, take a Spanish course and then you run over and play Call of Duty and then run out the door and talk on a cell phone all while using the same headset. And then he'll look like one of those, you know, Borg Bluetooth droids or drones.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. But what does it cost?
Well, it's not too bad. It's about $30 online. So the price is pretty great compared to other headsets comparably rated.
Yeah, that is a good price for a headset.
One thing that's really cool about the PlayStation Bluetooth headset that I haven't seen in other headsets is that it can also be used while it's in the charging station as a desktop microphone. So if you're playing a game or, you know, working on your Spanish, your battery goes dead, you go, oh, plug it into the desktop charger, and you can keep talking.
Nice.
That's really nice.
That is really nice.
I was impressed with that. Another one about this is... From the review that I've read about it, the audio quality is really good, so it should work whether he's, you know, talking to a computer software in the Spanish class or if he's talking to a real person.
Mm-hmm.
However, I give a slight word of warning. I did read a few forums where folks had trouble connecting their headset to a PC running Windows XP. And I don't think that was a problem related to the headset as much as it was to Windows XP.
Because I've had an older operating system that doesn't...
Windows XP wasn't designed for Bluetooth, so it added the support later versus Vista and Windows 7 and now Windows 8, which have built-in support for Bluetooth.
It works
native
a lot
to
better.
The OS.
Yeah, I've used Bluetooth on my XP PC, and it is kind of hard to deal with sometimes. So if your son is running XP, you might want to consider getting him a separate wired headset for a Spanish class. Unfortunately, from the forums I read, the chances of a wired USB headset that worked for both the PS3, the Mac, and PC are a little slim. And USB headsets for PS3 are actually more expensive than the Bluetooth ones. So.
Really?
Oh, yep.
All right, we have another question here that's kind of similar to the one we just talked about. It says, I'd like to use a wireless headset with my iPhone while I work on my house chores. What would be the best one?
Oh, okay. Well, first of all, if you have a PlayStation 3, I might recommend the Sony PlayStation Bluetooth headset.
There you go.
But seriously, it depends on what you want to use it for. If you're looking for something just to use to talk on the phone, based on the reviews I read, actually, that would be a good suggestion. On the pricier end, there's the Jawbone Era and the Icon. They're really good choices, as long as you don't have a beard.
What?
And I'm assuming that this is kind of sexist, but saying while I worked on my house chores, I assumed it was a woman. That's kind of kind of terrible of me, but I'm assuming if you are a woman, you don't have a beard. But no one mentioned this to me when I bought a Jawbone, so I feel obligated to mention it. The Jawbone headsets are virtually useless if you have sideburns or a beard, because the way that Jawbone's noise cancellation works is by having a little rubber nub that touches your jawbone appropriately.
I did not know that.
And it picks up the vibrations from your voice to determine which noises to cancel out. But if you have sideburns or a beard, the nub can't touch your skin, so it doesn't work nearly as well.
Huh.
On the cheap end of things, $30 to $40 range, if you're looking for something that can do both, that you can take phone calls with and listen to music or podcasts, there's the Motorola S10, which is an in-ear headset, but it also goes around the back of your head, which is kind of uncomfortable when I used it. There's also the Jabra Clipper, which kind of looks like a little MP3 player with a pair of headphones. It like clips to your phone,
okay.
But it's a nice Bluetooth device that connects to your phone. You can put it in your pocket or clip it to your shirt, like I said, and you can use the included headphones or use your own.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's kind of cool.
In the middle of the spectrum, $70 to $90, there's my two favorites, the Jabra Halo and Halo 2, and the Plantronics Backbeat Go. The Jabra Halo is the smooth, classic shape, full ear headset, and it also folds up neatly. It has really great sound. The basses are solid. The treble isn't real tinny. And it comes with a cord, so you can plug it into like your classic iPod or your Walkman.
Nice.
So, and the Plantronic Backbeat Go is really awesome because it's super small. It's basically a pair of earbuds with a cord attaching them.
Okay.
So the battery life isn't that fantastic, but it's pretty great.
I'd like to say for the Bose fanboys and, of course, girls out there, they now have a nice device called the Bose Bluetooth Headset Series 2.
Oh, nice.
Retails on their website for $150, so it's definitely on the pricey end. But, of course, it is a Bose for those that know their technology and sound.
Yeah, and as a owner of Bose headphones, their tech support
is fantastic.
Yeah. So you get what you pay for.
And the quality of the audio is amazing.
Absolutely.
Of course. And their headset is A2DP compatible, which means that it will stream your audio over Bluetooth. So if you have music or you like to do something like Google Play music on your phone, then you'll be able to stream that. And it is compatible to be used with the PS3. So you can use it as a gaming headset for your console as well. But it is engineered to be side specific. So make sure
you know
which side of the head you want it on before you place your $150 order.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, and if you have some money to blow and you're just looking for something to play music or listen to a podcast on, there's also the Jawbone Jambox and its bigger brother, the Big Jambox. Both are really awesome Bluetooth speakers for really kicking sound that you can charge up and take with you. And they have a great built-in microphone, too, so they're great for taking conference calls with. But they run $199 for the little one and $299 for the big one. So,
and I will say I've never owned one of these personally, but I have demoed them in the stores and tested them out, and the sound quality on them is fantastic for both a wireless and a portable speaker device.
Yep. Yeah. So, well, whatever you're listening to us on, we've got to take a break. This is Beamable Tech.
All right. This is my impression of dubstep. Get out of that refrigerator right now! Get out of that refrigerator right now! All right. This is my impression of dubstep.
Welcome back to Deemable Tech. Let's see. Let's take some more emails, you think? Maybe.
This once.
Yeah, we'll answer an email. Okay. And I'll read this one. Let's see. Lance asks, I have a kind of embarrassing situation. A couple years ago, I got into a sticky legal situation and was arrested. I don't want to get into a lot of ugly details, but ultimately they let me go and no charges were filed. I was glad to have that mess behind me. But recently I typed my name into Google, and one of the first things that pops up is my mugshot on mugshots.com.
Oh, snap.
Oh, I don't want some future employer stumbling across that, or even someone in my family stumbling across that. So how can I get this or any other personal information removed from the internet? It's the internet. You're stuck. It's there. Isn't that the case?
Okay. The first thing to realize is, like, people sort of have this idea sometimes that the internet is a centralized thing that can be controlled, and it's not.
It's my internet.
It's not. Yeah. So you're going to, this is a really a case by case basis. You have to contact the website that you want that information removed from. In this case, you would have to contact mugshots.com.
How would you contact mugshots.com? Like, look them up in the phone book?
Well, first go to their website. Usually there's some kind of contact information on their website. You know, there's an about page, contact us, whatever. And I would try that route first. If that doesn't work, though, you can always find out who a website is registered through and contact them.
So if I go to, I don't know, let's not pick on mugshots.com, but if you go to a website, and I've seen several websites that don't have really good contact us, what would you do then?
Then you want to find out basically who owns the website and find their contact information. And to do that...
Well, you can't you also look up on a Whois?
Yeah, you can, that's where I was looking for. You can do a Whois lookup and just Google Whois. There's a number of websites that allow you to do it.
Yeah, I know you can actually Google will provide it too. If you type in Whois and the name of the website, it'll give you some information if it's registered by the person.
If you've ever registered a website yourself, like with GoDaddy or whatever, you have to give
your contact information.
And that's all Whois does is goes back to that record, which is publicly available on the internet.
Unless it's a private registration, and then they put pseudo information up.
In that case, say you had GoDaddy and had done a private registration, then you have to contact GoDaddy. Right. GoDaddy has to contact the website's owner.
And the good thing with the Whois is that it'll tell you who owns that or who hosts that site, so you know who to contact there.
So, but yeah, so you've got to try and contact them through one method or another. If that doesn't work, well, get your lawyer on the phone. In some cases, you may have to, and that's unfortunate. But again, the internet's there's no king of the internet who can take that information off.
Right.
You have to work with the website operator, and if they're not willing to work with you, hopefully they are. I think in most cases, probably mugshot.com, which is a serious website. They would probably be willing to work with you. I have a friend who was able to get his mugshot taken down there.
Yeah.
No problem.
Because he was in a similar situation.
He was in a similar situation, actually. But, if it's some kind of fly-by-night website, it may be more difficult. And unfortunately, you might have to get lawyers involved.
We were discussing this before during the break, that there are some celebrities who had some pictures that they didn't want posted on the internet. And, you know, everyone was saying, it's on the internet now, it's forever. But now they're gone. I mean, they've basically took legal action against those sites and got rid of it.
Yeah, yep.
So, it doesn't... Sometimes, though, things do stick around forever.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. This is more a case of textual information than, like, a photo. But there are services that, are basically dedicated to archiving the internet. Most famous one's probably the Wayback Machine. If you ever want to see like what, Amazon.com looked like in 1999, it's actually a lot of fun. You can go on the Wayback Machine and it'll pull it up. But it's a two-edged sword because, if there's personal information about you that's several years old, that's probably out there in that archive. It's not instantly accessible, but if somebody really wants to find it, they probably can. And that's just tricky. It's sort of the nature of the internet. The internet's really bad at forgetting things.
Yeah, that's true. Go ahead.
I was going to say there are now some services that kind of do the legwork for you.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to ask you, if there were any.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the age of the internet. If there's something out there, there's somebody else who's trying to gobble it up and delete it. So some of the big ones now are SafeShepherd.com.
Okay.
They actually scan across the internet for your personal information, which has been made public or is being sold. And you can actually easily remove records which violate your privacy, are risky, or are even inaccurate.
Now, do they basically contact the websites to do that for you, right?
Kind of like what you were talking about before. They do the Whois searches, and they'll track these people down. And kind of going through a service might be a little bit more of leverage against some of these websites, too, because you're not just an individual. Now you're going through a company that has their own legal team and
that's
stuff.
That's true.
Right, yeah, that's true.
And Safe Shepherd also, you can receive real-time alerts when your personal information appears on the web, whether you put it there or not. So if somebody else is putting information up there about you that's inaccurate to try to slander you, that's an easy way to find out about it.
Let me jump in, too. I think that's actually a pretty valuable service because it's kind of, as I just referenced with the Wayback Machine, the faster you get the stuff off the internet, right, the better.
The less likely it is to be copied and posted elsewhere.
Exactly. The longer it's out there, the kind of stickier it gets. Mm-hmm. So,
now, is that a free service, or is there a paid subscription? Well,
that's going to cost you, right?
It does say that you can sign up for free on their website, safeshepherd.com.
Okay.
Now, as far as ongoing services, I haven't actually personally used them, so I'm not sure about that. But like I said, if you're concerned about your personal information, even if it is a paid service, it may be worth a fee to pay somebody to take care of these things. There's things like LifeLock and stuff like that for your credit, but now people are more and more finding out that identity fraud and the means of slander or inaccurate information can be almost as much damaging as credit hits and stuff like that can.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely true. All right. Well, let's see. Were there any others like Safe Shepherd?
Yeah, there's another one called mypermissions.org, and that allows you to get alerts when apps access your private information and remove them all in one click. So it kind of scans some of the bigger things like Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, things like that, Dropbox, and maybe can tell you what apps are accessing your personal information or sharing personal information that you may not know about.
Okay, cool. All right, we got another question. Tom, grab that one.
Okay, this guy writes in, I have a Dell laptop with Windows XP and want to put Windows 7 on it, but my techie friend says I need a better computer. All I know is that I have a Dell. How can I find out how much memory I have and that kind of stuff? So that's a common question I think we all run into as tech support kind of guys, you know.
I know often when I ask someone, okay, what kind of computer do you have? It's a e-machine? I don't know.
Or it's a laptop.
It's a laptop.
It's a laptop.
That's like asking somebody what kind of car do you have, and they're like, it's a Ford?
Can we narrow it down just a little bit?
but legitimately, your average user doesn't know what's under the hood.
Yeah.
Of their computer. So how would they find that out?
Yeah, there's a couple easy ways to get this information. Of course, the easiest way to determine if your PC is ready for Windows 7 is to download the official free Windows 7 upgrade advisor from Microsoft.
And we are not being paid to say this.
No, I say official because this is something that you should download from the Microsoft website.
Right.
Don't download it from a third-party website. It's their official app and it's free, so you should download it from their webpage.
Good point.
Okay.
The nice thing about this one is the Upgrade Advisor scans your PC for potential issues with your hardware, attached devices, and I say attached because it must be connected and running for the software to detect them, and any installed software programs that you're using, and it'll tell you any recommendations about what the user needs to do before an upgrade. So you may need to update your software, you may need to get more RAM, and things like that.
Well, that's good for if you're looking to upgrade, but what about just if you're curious about what the basic specs of your computer are?
Absolutely. A way you can get some quick specs on your computer, not too detailed, is you can right-click on My Computer. Now, some users may have
that. Obviously, we're talking about Windows here.
Correct. This is for the Windows environment. So if you have a Windows computer running XP or higher, if you have the My Computer shortcut on your desktop, you can right-click that. If not, you can navigate to your Start menu, and then select the properties after right-clicking on the My Computer in your Start menu.
Right.
And that will allow you to see what operating system you're running, including service packs. It'll say XP Service Pack 3, Vista Service Pack 1, etc. And then it'll tell you your processor speed and the amount of system memory or RAM that you have installed.
Right.
But that may not be enough for some users. So a couple other software tools that you can download are CPU-Z, which is one of my favorites. It's a nice piece of free software that will tell you the complete technical specs of your device as far as the hardware is concerned.
Okay.
It will give you details such as maybe the clock speed of your memory modules.
Oh, wow.
And that's a way to tell if maybe you have a slower stick of memory that's causing your machine to be sluggish. The speeds, if they're all matched, will run a lot better than if you have two at one speed and then one at a slower speed. It can actually cause your whole machine to run at that slower speed for compatibility purposes.
Okay.
So that's something nice to know. And it'll also tell you information about your processor. If you're thinking about doing a processor upgrade, you'll know what class of processors your machine runs and what the socket is. so you know which processors would be compatible with your machine. Now, for those that are looking for more of a complete solution as far as software and hardware, a nice one is from BellArc. It's called the BellArc Advisor.
Yeah, that's the one that I've used often. I like that
one. That's BellArc, right?
Correct. Yep. BellArc, and that can be downloaded from bellarc.com. And it gives you your full system information and stores it on a local web page that opens up in your browser. And I say local because some users might think that it's on the internet,
right,
because it opens in your Internet Explorer or Chrome or Firefox browser. But it's just a local HTML file that uses Internet Explorer.
Like a document, like a Word doc.
Correct. It is stored locally. And it pulls the detailed information about your installed software and hardware, network inventory, any missing Microsoft hot fixes, and even your antivirus status and security benchmarks, so that you know if your computer is missing security updates,
That's nice.
If your hot fixes aren't up to date from Microsoft Update, etc. So that one gives you a little bit more information than CPU-Z does. However, CPU-Z offers a no-install option that you can download. So some users may not want to install anything on their computer, or it may be a friend's computer that doesn't want anything installed. So there is an option just to run from a file with that one versus the BellArc Advisor, which you have to install on your computer in order to use that tool.
Yeah, both of these, I mean, for the average user may not really care about this, but it kind of reminds me of my dad when I was younger, and he would talk about like the 302s, V8s, and like he would just use all these terminology that I had no idea what he was talking about. You're like, oh, it's a carburetor. What is a carburetor? I don't know. But both of these, CPU-Z and BellArc Advisor, kind of give you all that information so that if you need it, you know, like if you're looking to see, oh, does this software work with my computer, or, you know, can I upgrade to this, or can I put, you know, this hardware on it?
Or you're just on the phone with tech support and they're like, you know, what the heck do you have on your computer?
It gives you all the details of, you know, the internals of your computer.
Absolutely. The nice things about BellArc and the Windows Upgrade Advisor, which I will kind of close with this one, is that they give you a file that you can save on your computer. And the nice thing about that is if, for instance, you're wanting a third-party tech to come out and perform the service for you, you could email that file to them and get a quote remotely without them actually having to come out and take a look at your machine. You could just send them that and say, this is what my machine is running. I don't understand these numbers, but tell me what I need to do to get it up to this level, or what I can put in it to make it faster.
All right, we got another email, Tom.
Roxy writes, I'm trying to delete apps off my iPod Touch, and every time I hold down the icons to make them jiggle, the X button doesn't appear.
That's strange.
Do you have any idea why the X button isn't appearing, and how do I delete apps from my iPod Touch?
Nice catching that there. Actually, this one stumped me. I had to do a little research. The only time that you could hold down an icon until it started jiggling, and
I love the jiggle.
It's kind of like when you hold them and they start jiggling. It looks like they're all like shaking in fear, like "Don't delete me!" But the only time where the X button wouldn't appear is if you're, you know, looking at stock apps, like Notes or Phone. Those you can't delete generally. But also, if you're in the dock at the bottom of the iPhone, then there would be a minus sign that would appear instead of the X, because that's how you close the apps out of running out of the background.
Okay.
So I did a little research, though, and I found that you can actually turn off the ability to delete an app on your iPhone or iPod Touch or your iPad.
Now, this is for non-stock apps, so this is for installed apps, correct?
Right, for third-party apps. So what you can do is check your restrictions. Go to Settings, General, and then scroll down to Restrictions. You'll be asked for a PIN code that you entered when you set up your restrictions on your iPhone, assuming that you're the one that put the restriction on there. If your parents did it, then you know you might have to talk to them and see if you can get that restriction removed. If you don't remember the PIN number that you entered, you're in trouble. There's really no easy way to reset it. There's a couple of software apps that you can use to kind of hack the iPhone to get that information. But that's maybe a question for another episode. It's kind of in detail. But there's no real easy way to reset it. So after you've entered the PIN code and you've reset the, or you've opened the restrictions menu, scroll down to the deleting app section and make sure it's turned to on, that restriction is not turned off. Okay. If not, switch it from off to on. Then you should be able to hold down the icon and the apps will have X marks after they start jiggling. So, now, how does it work with Android?
Android's very similar in the sense that you can't uninstall stock apps if you're running a completely stock phone.
Right.
However, for some Android users, you can uninstall stock apps such as those Blockbuster, VZ Navigator, maybe TuneWiki, some of those that come with the phone, using third-party tools like Titanium Backup. But, as with most of the other really neat Android tricks, it is both risky. If you don't know which apps to delete, you could cause instability. And of course, the biggest one, it requires root access. So your phone must be rooted in order to do that.
Mm-hmm.
However, you are able to completely uninstall those apps once you have that done to your phone. So if you are rooted, you can get a program like Titanium Backup or another uninstaller, and you can completely uninstall the apps. Now, can you do that on an iPhone if you're jailbroken,
yeah,
Ray?
If you jailbreak, you can make stock apps disappear, but I don't think you can actually delete them. And I know I'm probably going to get attacked by jailbreakers and our listeners. And please do, you know, email us or send us a tweet and tell me I'm wrong.
Yeah,
I love being wrong. It's okay.
We love hearing when Ray's wrong.
Yeah, okay. And my wife, too. Everyone loves hearing that Ray's wrong. But I believe that if you're jailbroken, it will make the app disappear so it doesn't appear on your home screen. But the app is still there because unlike Android, well, I guess there is the iPad. That doesn't have a phone either. But, you know, what would be the point of deleting, you know, the phone app?
Well, for like iPhones and stuff, they're running all of their third-party browsers are running off of Safari.
That's true.
So it is kind of a system instability issue if you would delete Safari versus with Android.
Right.
If you delete the Android browser, you could put on a Dolphin or
that's true.
Firefox or Chrome for Android and use a completely other browser. If you're not using the stock browser, why keep it on there?
Yeah, and a lot of people don't use things, especially, iPhone doesn't have this as often with the bloatware, like you were talking about Blockbuster or VZ Navigator. But, you know, there's some people who, you know, I don't care about Notes. I don't use Notes. I use another app. So you know, why have it on your screen?
Yeah, Android devices definitely are a lot more prone to come conveniently pre-installed with things that you will never, ever use.
Yeah.
And that depends entirely on the carrier, you know?
And part of that is to keep the cost of these devices down. You're getting a $600 device for $200. Cost of it has to come, to be
they
addressed
somewhere. They got to pay for it somehow. And they were used to doing that for years on dumb phones, throwing in, you know, I think it's really hurt most of the carriers that they can't sell, like, ringtones anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's really hurt their bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
But that is about all the time that we have for today. Let's see. Thanks for all your voicemails and your emails, and definitely send us some voicemails. Give us a call when we'll use them on the show as well.
Put you on the air and you'll be famous.
Our producer is Sean Birch. I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
I'm Aaron Edelson.
And this is Deemable Tech. Thanks for listening and have a great week.